New. I'm your host, Priscilina Evert. Thank you for joining me today. So our special guest is Dr. Ray Guarendi, and we are going to be discussing his book, Adoption, Should You, Could You, and Then What? And Dr. Ray is a father of 10 adopted children, so he really does know what he's talking about. And he really is going to answer those tough questions and kind of blow out those misperceptions about adoption that there is out there and encourage you to really think and maybe act upon maybe that prompting of the Holy Spirit if God has put adoption on your heart. And absolutely, it can be scary and there's a lot of unknowns. So Dr. Ray is here to answer all of that for us. But before we get into that, we have a beautiful clip from Matt Frad talking about God's love for his daughters. And it's absolutely just beautiful and very encouraging. And for those of you that maybe that rings true in their heart and needing God's mercy right now, don't forget that there is confession at every church almost. Almost, you have to look it up. But that you can go to today and Saturday, typically in the afternoons, they have confession. So to go and to start over and just be right with God, it's the most important thing that we can do right now. So we're going to hear from Matt Frad. And right after that, we are going to get right into it with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So stay tuned.
I want to tell you about my daughter, Avila. One day my son and I were wrestling on the bed, right? And I thought, what would happen if I tackled Avila, you know, and said, Liam, come and save your sister. Well, I got Avila into a little headlock. I wasn't mean. It wasn't a hard headlock. And Liam comes over and punches me in the temple. It really hurt. I let go, you know. And I thought, isn't this beautiful that Liam is rehearsing his role for something more serious that he will have to do? Defend the dignity of woman. So I thought to myself, what would happen if I got Liam in a headlock? And I said, Avila, come and protect your brother. Well, I got Liam in a headlock, and this is what she did, the darling girl. She comes over and starts rubbing the face of Liam, said, it's okay, which did nothing, but I love her. Now, here's the thing. Can I share with you my deepest fear of Avila? This would be it. That as she grows older, that the dreams she now has as a little girl, you know, dreams about love and a knight in shining armor and all that. My fear is that that will begin to shrink and fade as life knocks her around a bit, you know, as things, God forbid, happen to her, as she gets involved with stuff that she's not proud of. My deepest fear is that she will lose these great dreams that she has now as a kid. And that's my fear for you too, that maybe over the course of your life, stuff has happened to you, that life's knocked you around a little bit and has left you cynical. And God, you know what? If Avila, regardless of what she ever did, if she approached me and said, Dad, I've done this stuff I'm not proud of, you know? Holy smokes, I would pick that girl up in my arms. I don't care how old she was. And I would take her out on a date to Burger King or something, right? And we'd have like a daddy-daughter date again. And I would try so hard to just tell her I love her, you know, that the great dignity and unalienable rights that she has been given as a daughter of God have not vanished. I would encourage her to approach the sacrament of confession. And I think to myself, if I love her this much, if I desire her this much, if my heart would break this much, how much more would the Heavenly Father's heart break when his daughter's dreams begin to atrophy? You know, and how much more God would want to scoop you up in his arms and call you his princess, and that he desires to lead you to the eternal banquet of heaven. If you've lived a life of sin in the past, I know that those wounds didn't come overnight, and that, you know, the fact is they're not going to go away overnight either. And right now you might be journeying in sanctity. You might be growing holy. And holiness takes a long time. Ask my wife about me, right? Holiness takes a long time. And it occurred to me one day, I was standing out the back and looking over the snow-covered backyard. And as the snow began to melt, I began to realize that there was junk under the snow. You realize this, that when it's winter, people just kind of throw litter on the ground and they don't think about it. But as the snow melts, we begin to see what lies beneath, right? So I remember I saw my son's bicycle, which was lying over on its side, which I didn't know was there. And then I saw some kind of cardboard boxes and then little trash, right? And it occurred to me, the same thing happens in your heart and my heart when the Son of God shines His grace upon us, when He liberates us from mortal sin and the work of sanctification begins, that as the ice of snow melts and our heart comes alive, it's true, we begin to see lots of imperfections in our life. And sometimes we might be tempted to think that maybe we're not making progress, when in fact, the opposite might be true. Saint Teresa of Avila used this image of walking through a dark tunnel, right? And before you see the light, you think you're doing quite well, you look okay. But as the light comes in, you go, oh, I've got something here and I've got a stain over here. And the closer you come into the light, you're like, I am a slob, I'm covered in mud. But at that point, we can turn to the Lord and go, thank you, Jesus. It's not about me. It's about what you have done for me. You have saved me. You love me and you desire to make me a new creation. You have done so in baptism and you have done so in reconciliation. You'll continue to do so as I grow in my love for you. So just a word of encouragement. If you've lived a sinful life in the past and you're walking that slow walk of sanctification and you see in your life areas of sin and temptation that are still popping up, don't be discouraged. It may be the case that you're coming closer and closer to the light of God.
Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett. Thank you for joining me. And we have Dr. Ray Guarendi back here at the Women Made New studio. Thank you for being here with me today, Dr. Ray.
I was driving by a place where they do makeup and hair and all that stuff. And it said Women Made New. Did they steal that from you?
They sure did. No.
Tell you what.
They do the outside. I try to do the inside for women. Let's put it that way.
Got it.
There we go. So we are discussing your book, Adoption. Should you, could you, and then what? And that's kind of a scary thing these days, Dr. Ray, to even kind of, I know some friends who are even scared to just go even towards that process because of everything going on. And I thought it would be good to go over all of this with you, especially what's happening in the world. And people are scared of it right now, of adopting, I know at least my close friends, and this can kind of put them at ease and answer those really tough, hard questions that people have about it as well.
What are they afraid of?
I think it's more their own personal fears of, are they going to be a good parent? Is this really God's will? Is how long's the process going to take? Are we going to be disappointed that we may get a child and then we don't get someone? Or what if we get a child and then it's not a right fit? Things like that, that I've heard from different friends.
Do you mean, Crystalina, every question that I addressed in that book?
Absolutely. Yes, Dr. Ray. It is every question you address in the book. It's perfect. What made you adopt in the first place, Dr. Ray?
Tax deductions. You know, if you adopt in December, you still get the tax deduction for the whole year. So, you know, you break even long about September, October, then you have to start feeding them more. So you start to fall behind. But that first year is pretty good. You know,
way down the road.
All right. The real reason. We couldn't conceive. I had a situation that was congenital, and I didn't know it until we got married and tried to conceive. Doctor told me it was congenital, so I threatened to sue my mother, but the attorney said the statute of limitations had probably run out, so I let her off with a pretty stern warning. This better not ever happen again. You know, we figured, okay, we'll adopt one, maybe two, kind of what you're saying that people are nervous about now.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we were able to. And then we learned a secret. And the secret is this. If you're willing to adopt across race or a sibling group or older children, it's much quicker and it is much cheaper. Now, here's the problem. You get a lot of folks who are saying, well, what if it doesn't work out? What if I don't like this kid? What if this kid's tough to raise? Mm-hmm. We already have two biological kids. What if they don't take to him? What if they say, you ruined our family. Why did you ruin our family? What if my grandmother looks at this kid of another race and just really doesn't, it's real clear she favors the other two. Mm-hmm. What about all these things? But Cristalina, you said something interesting. You said, people wonder, did the Lord call us to adopt, right? Do you remember mm-hmm. that question?
Yeah.
Well, he wrote it down. My wife said that once. I said, honey, you know, people are saying, how do you know if you're called to adopt? And she said, well, he wrote it down. James, the letter of James. And this is faith that is pure and undefiled before the Lord, that we take care of the widows and the orphans in their distress. Mm. Or Jesus, whoever welcomes a little child welcomes me. So I'm not saying you have to adopt, obviously,
yeah,
to be a good Christian. But if you're wondering, if you're saying, yeah, you know, I really would consider this, but I'm not sure if that's what God wants me to do. Well, that take care of that one right there.
Yeah.
It already is what he wants you to do. So just to answer that one.
Now, is how a lot of people are scared because they think the adoption process is completely rigorous. Is that true?
Depends what you mean by rigorous, and it depends what you mean by where you go. If you're going to go overseas, yeah, the varying countries, they all have their various kinds of conditions and hurdles you have to jump. That's true. If you go private, either through a private agency or a private attorney, it can be costly, anywhere between 10 and 30 grand. However, two things to consider. One, that's pretty much the price of a decent used car. And two, you get a tax credit of 10 grand. That's a credit now. It's not a deduction. It's a credit. You could take it off your taxes for the next 3 years, up to 10 grand. Of course, you get the child credit per year, and you also get a deduction. So it ends up being very affordable in that sense. If you go public, like we did, four of our kids were public through agencies, public agencies. You don't pay a dime. Okay, so that's the first thing. Take care of the money factor.
Mm-hmm.
The second factor is, and I hesitate to say this, Cristalina, because I don't want to scare people off, but I want to give them a realistic sense. If this child has been alcohol or drug exposed in the womb, or there has been neglect or abuse resulting in the child being taken from birth mom, mm-hmm. then the odds are higher that this kid's going to be tougher to raise. Maybe more learning problems, maybe more immaturity, maybe some slower to form consciences, maybe more impulsivity, etc. That can happen. I've got some children like that. But that doesn't mean that you can't raise them. And it doesn't mean that if you know what you're getting into, that you will be braced for what you have to deal with. I tell people, I got some children probably going to serve the church. I got some probably going to serve time. You know what I mean?
You know, I think a lot of people feel that way, adopted, non-adopted.
Yeah, I know.
I really think most parents feel that way. So you're not alone in that at all. What are some things that parents right now, or parents that want to adopt, okay, and want to be parents basically, what are some things they can do right now to kind of prepare themselves, to kind of just go through that process in their minds, in their hearts, in prayer, even with a system to prepare if they're kind of going down that path?
There is a book, and I don't exactly know. See, I'm like my grandfather. I jumped right over being my dad to being my grandfather. There is a book in the library called Adoption Resource Handbook. It lists all the agencies by state and what they quote unquote specialize in, whether it's cross race, whether it's older, what the fees are, waiting times, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one place they can go to look. Of course, there's all kinds of stuff on the internet. You type in state of Colorado, six-year-old females for adoption. Well, big list of them will come up. These are all kids in foster care, you know. So that's one possibility. Another one is parents will say, okay, I have a 7-year-old girl and I have a 4-year-old boy biologically. We'd like to adopt, but I'm not sure how they'll adjust. Well, I always tell parents, you don't put a whole lot of weight in the kids making a decision. I was reading this one supposed adoption expert saying that if your children don't want you to adopt, you do not adopt. I think that's nonsense. I think it's absolute raw nonsense. This is a parental decision. This is something that the parent decides. Now, you could talk to the kids about it, but it's something you decide. Now, with our kids, they always wanted another brother or sister, plus we paid them. You know, it was like $40 per kid, and then sometimes you had to throw in a milkshake for the younger ones. But they were pretty easily bought off. Now, did we have some adjustment problems? Here and there. But, you know, it's like it's anything else. You roll with it. You don't sit there and freak out because you've got a child that you're going to have someday in therapy. I remember when we adopted our twins, they were 4 years old, and they were so stinking undisciplined. It was unbelievable. I remember sitting one time in the family room thinking to myself, what did we do with our lives? It was wild. They were brats, major brats. But it just so turns out I don't like brats. So therefore, I dealt with them. And within the first couple, 3 months, 80% of their bratty behavior that they had was gone. But I was prepared. This is dad. You're not going to fight me at bedtime. This is what I'm going to do about it. Now, we had a 3-year-old who started biting as soon as they came into the house.
Wow.
Now, we knew she was biting. Do you ever watch Forensic Files where they show these bite marks and they take these plaster casts of the teeth marks? Well, we knew they were her teeth because yes, we had plaster casts made. And so here's how we handled it. We figured out that Joanna, the 4-year-old twin, was provoking Sarah. And then Sarah, who was 3, was biting her. So we told Joanna, if Sarah gets in trouble for biting, you're going to get in trouble too. And Joanna looked at us like, what? What? What kind of equity is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the biting stopped in about a week.
Oh, I bet it did. I bet it did. Well, this is one question I really wanted to ask you because you're ready to go. I mean, you're locked and loaded. You have the knowledge. You're a professional psychologist. And you kind of have that baseline of knowing what to do because of your work and your background. But what about the parents that don't? And what about the moms that maybe they do adopt and then they are very difficult children, but then they are worried or scared or hold back disciplining because they feel like, oh, well, this child's been through so much, or they're going to think I'm hurting them or abusing them, or they don't feel like they know how to be a parent. How do they get past those fears and those hurdles? Because even with my own children, I've had those problems, you know, but now this is a completely different world of bringing another child into the home that isn't yours to begin with.
Crystalina, the shrinks have ruined parents.
No, I agree, Dr. Ray. They have freaked us out.
Yes.
Parents are freaked out to parent.
Yes.
And it's horrible. I understand exactly what you're saying.
When you adopt, you realize you are the parent. You make the decisions for better or for worse. You are not setting out to deliberately damage this child psychologically. Whatever mistakes you make, if you wouldn't even call them mistakes, which most of the time they're not. They're just differences in judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is, if you recognize I'm going to do what I think is best at this moment in time, you will be much more relaxed. Now, okay, here's a question for you. Let's say all these skittish parents who are nervous about adopting because they're just afraid they're going to get a tough kid. What if God said, okay, here's what I'll do. I will whisper instructions into your ear every day on how to handle this child. Would that guarantee the child would turn out okay?
Not necessarily.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because God is a respecter of free will. God knows how that child is wired.
Mm-hmm.
God knows what that kid has in his neurological structure.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, even with God giving you instructions, it's going to be exerting good judgment, common sense, and above all, authority. I'll give you a small example. My wife had major authority with the children. Absolutely. I mean, when she said, go to the corner, you better go to the corner or she'll just shut you down. Okay. One day they were battling over cereal. And you know how that is.
Yes.
They bring out the calipers. They bring out the weight scale so that one person doesn't get a bigger flake than the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So they yanked on the box. Everything went all over the floor. All right. My wife had them clean it up. Not a problem. Cereal on the floor, big deal. The next time she went to the grocery store, as they watched, she simply put cornflakes, no other cereal, cornflakes into the cart for 1 year.
Oh, my God.
Now, do you think that sent a pretty good message? Don't fight over cereal.
Yes, and I am an absolute lightweight in my home.
I begged her. I begged her. I said, honey, I'll give you $50 for one box of Golden Grahams. $50. That's all. Fruit Loops. Fruity Pebbles.
Anything with sugar, right?
Yes, right.
Well, Dr. Ray, what happens if you don't agree? You don't agree with your spouse or they don't agree with you. And then that's a riff and it's just...
You talking about after the adoption or before?
After.
That's a marriage problem.
Hmm. Okay.
We had a simple rule in our home that worked well for us, and I advise it to a lot of parents. The parent with the stricter discipline and the higher standard rules. For example, I was pretty proud of my sons when they could burp the alphabet at the table all the way up to L without taking a breath. My wife didn't like that. Ah, what a girl.
My goodness.
So if she sent them from the table for something I wouldn't, she rules. That's it.
Wow.
I wanted to watch the Three Stooges with my boys. My wife said, no, Ray, I don't want them imitating this stuff. So I remember when they got to be about 7 or 8, we had a Three Stooges party because we could all watch the Three Stooges at that age because we were old enough. But I waited until then to get my wife's cooperation on this. Even though I would have let them watch the Three Stooges, I'm not going to fight with her over this.
Yeah.
She rules. So I think that's one good rule of thumb for parents. The other problem is if you develop house rules, for example, what are you going to do when a child throws a fit? What are you going to do when they argue disrespectfully? What are you going to do when they don't do their chores? What are you going to do with sibling quibbling? What's the house rule here? So if you got a house rule, then one parent can't say, well, you didn't handle that right. No, I just went according to the house rule. They both go to the corner. That's the house rule. That's one possible help. The thing I see the most, Crystalina, and this is, I think it's a relatively new phenomenon. Dads have become wimps. The moms are the ones who are doing most of the disciplining, setting the standards. In many homes, not all, but in many, more than it used to be.
You're right.
More than it used to be. The mm-hmm. dads are kind of along for the ride. The dads are more oblivious. The dads are Mr. Good Time.
Yeah, more fun.
Yeah. The dads mm-hmm. are, honey, I was that way when I was a kid. I think I turned out pretty good. And the women are thinking, let's gather the relatives and vote.
Yeah.
So what's happening here is I tell these guys, I say, hey, back that woman up. More than back the woman up. Step in front of her. Take the hit. We had a rule in our house that worked real well. I told my wife, I said, honey, when you have a rule or a standard or an expectation, whatever it is that you establish, and they start to argue with you, you simply tell them, you talk to dad. This was his idea. Whether it was or whether it wasn't. And so when they came to me and they said, mom said, you're the one who said I couldn't go. And I said, I did? Well, the first few times I had to realize, hey, no. Yeah. And then I started saying, yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. So what's your problem, son? Because I wanted them to not, I don't want them to give grief to their mother. I'm not going to let that happen.
Yeah.
And by the way, men, if you are listening, and you protect that woman from those children, they feel very affectionate toward you. Just wanted to tell you that.
That's a good tip.
Yeah, sometimes I give my boys a couple bucks. Go give your mother grief. I'll be right in.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious. Well, what about single moms that are wanting to adopt?
They can, obviously. The problem might be that they would have to adopt kids that are not in high demand. The healthy white infant is a very quote-unquote high-demand child. And there are many more parents open to adopting a healthy infant than there are infants. If the mom says, I'd like to provide a home for a sibling group of, say, 5 and 3-year-olds, or a child not of my race, or a child considered special needs, she has much more chance to do that. Here's the thing. Special needs is a very broad category. Very, very broad. By the definition, 7 or 8 of my children would be considered special needs. But really, for the most part, none of them are what you would consider special needs. For example, 3 of them are Black. Okay, that's special needs. They're being adopted by a white family. 2 are biracial. Okay, that's special needs. They're biracial. 2 are Hispanic. Okay, that's special needs. 4 were older. Okay, that's special needs. Some were exposed to drug and alcohol in the womb. Okay, that's special needs. So you see what I mean, Crystalina? Mm-hmm. In other words, the special needs category is really broad.
Yeah, it is. Wow, it really is. Again, we are here with Dr. Ray Guarendi, and we are discussing his book, Adoption, Should You, Could You, Then What? And we are going to take a quick break with our friends over at EWTN, and we will be right back. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Evert, and we are talking with Dr. Ray Guarendi about adoption. Should you, could you, and then what? And it's his excellent book to answer all really tough questions that you may have if you're thinking about adoption. And right now, Dr. Ray, there are so many misplaced children in the United States coming from all walks of life. And I know so many children do need a home. How do you know which agency to go to? How do you even start the process? How long do you pray? Do you do novenas? What would you suggest?
Crystalina, are you asking for a formula?
Yes, please, Dr. Ray.
Okay, so let's see. You need 3 novenas. And let's see, if you throw in a special needs. Yeah, there's no formula, my dear.
There's no formula. I know. But people think there are. That's the misconception. What is the formula to start this? And how do I know? And then I'll be ready once I have that. See?
Well, okay, I'm a psychologist, and I'm really trained in being sensitive and empathic. So here's what I say to that.
Uh-oh.
They're wrong. In other words, if you're wanting to adopt and you simply look at the agencies available in your area, there are private, there are public, there are attorneys who may specialize. There are a whole lot of options. There are foreign adoption agencies. You can just do some searching. Check all those and see what options you have. You can do that. One of the things that happened, for example, I'll just give you a small example of how it can sort of take any trajectory. We had 6 kids. We had 6, 5, 4, 4, 3, and 1 at that point. And my wife was coming into the Catholic Church, and she was praying over at the Santa Clara Monastery in Canton, which is where we live, which was Mother Angelica's monastery. She was a prioress there. Okay. Mother Angelica went to St. Anthony's, which was my parish, which was where all of the Italians went, because it was by law. You have to go there. If you're Italian, you have to go to St. Anthony's, okay? Mother Angelica was a senior in Canton McKinley High School when my dad was a freshman. Rita Rizzo, So my wife's over at Santa Clara Monastery, and she said, Mary, because she was just starting to learn to pray to our Blessed Mother, said, Mary, I don't know. We're really not looking for another child. So if God wants us to have one, he's going to have to drop it in our lap. We got a call the next day from an attorney down in Columbus who said, I have a little baby boy. He's in intensive care. He was born 2 months premature. He's been in intensive care for 1 month. I have no place to put him. Mm. I have one other family out in Washington State if you're not interested. So my wife told me, and I said, oh, well, honey, what do you think? I said, that's pretty prudential timing, you know? I said, you had to go make a prayer like that, didn't you? Mm. So that's how we got little Petey. And Petey's 25 years old, and of probably all of our kids, he's the one that may have the most possible calling to the priesthood. I don't know. But he's 25, and he's just a sturdy young man. So, and he loves the faith. But that's how that happened. I mean, it was just kind of happened, you know? And then we had a few others like that. It was just sort of, we had one that was a buy one, get one free. We went up to Cuyahoga County Children's Services, Cleveland, and we had heard of a little boy, 3 years old, in foster care. And he had not been adopted, and all the other kids in foster care at that time had been adopted, and he was just sitting there. So we went up. About halfway through the process, the social worker says, you know, he has a half-sister. So I figured this is one of those candlelight adoption clubs, you know, where you buy the meal, you get the lesser meal for free or whatever that was. So that's kind of how that happened, you know, just sort of happened. And that's why I tell parents, don't overthink this. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to do it, you jump into the deep end of the pool.
That's right.
And you say, okay, you know, I'm not going to sit here and put all my eggs into this basket that if this kid turns out okay, I was a wonderful parent. And if he doesn't, I was a failure. You can't go into parenting like that. You got to go in to say, as Mother Teresa said, he asked you to be faithful. So you went in and you did it. And how it turns out, you don't second guess yourself. Now, my wife and I, our kids are grown now, Crystalina. They're 34 down to 22. And we will not tie our parental peace to what they do. We will not. Absolutely refuse. God asked us to love them, give them a home, raise them as best we could. Now, well,
that's in God's hands.
Yeah, it's up to them and God. No, that's exactly right. My wife and I, we just hit the buffets and go out to breakfast. That's all we do.
I can't even imagine having children that are 22 and on. You know, I have a 2-year-old all the way to a 17-year-old, and I'm in the rodeo right now in the thick of it. And one thing I can say that if God puts something on your heart, there's a reason for it. And you never know that reason. Just like Dr. Ray's son might have a vocation. You know, it's beautiful. You just never know the reason or the outcome or what God's doing. And honestly, fear can't control you. Fear should not control people in any aspect of your life. And if there is an aspect of fear, that's a distortion. And you've got to kind of pray through that and do it anyway. Just you've got to do it anyway. And this is a scary thing. It's a scary process. But if God's asking you to do it, he will bless you and give you everything that you need. And I think the world is so crazy, and there's so much going on with kids and everything's so confusing for them and even the parents that it can be a scary thing. And it's so confusing right now. I want to be very realistic with people also that are wanting to adopt. What are some negative things that they can prepare themselves now for that may come up either in the process of the adoption or after they adopt and once they have the child in their home?
Probably the biggest thing, Crystalina, is drug and alcohol exposure in the womb.
That one, okay.
What that tends to do is it affects the neurological development. Now, it may not make the particular compromising obvious, but it has more subtle effects. Development, maturity, conscience formation, those kinds of things. Maybe attachment, although please, I'm going to tell these people, don't get into this attachment disorder thing for heaven's sake. Attachment disorder is something that is more likely to be included in an overall development maturity problem. So given that, that's one. But you said a critical thing. There are a lot of people out there that would be very willing to say, dear Lord, we got a good family. We got a good marriage. We got the resources. You know, I would entertain adopting, but I'm just nervous and anxious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You know what I say about that? Once again, being a very sensitive, empathic psychologist. So what? So what? So you're nervous and anxious. Okay. So were we. And sometimes it works out good and sometimes it doesn't. But at the same time, you've got to be able to say, I gave this child a loving home. Now, what they do with it eventually is up to them. But I was moved to do this. I don't want to not do it simply because I'm skittish about it.
That's right.
Here's the other problem. Spouses don't always agree.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends upon what the spouse's objections are. If you can reason them through, okay. But if one spouse says, absolutely not going to do it, no way, no how, I don't care how much you want to do it, then you have to let it go. Because if that other spouse is not at least somewhat on board, this isn't going to work out well.
Yeah, you've got to have your spouse with you on this, or you're asking for trouble at that point before it even begins, right? It's just not going to work out. But if it's God's will, you should be in unison with it, correct? And kind of move forward, and he'll give you the grace and the courage to do so. Which books would you recommend that you've written about parenting that they should read to kind of prepare themselves for those hard moments that they are going to have them?
I would suggest all of the parenting books, because otherwise you're going to have psychological gaps. You know that? And what'll happen is, you won't have the book where the kid sets a fire. What do you do about that? You know, you won't have a book where they, okay. The most popular
one. You're freaking him out, Dr. Ray. You're freaking him out.
The most popular one is Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. Okay, that is 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked as a psychologist. It's on my website, drray.com. There are about 4 other parenting books there too. Advice Worth Ignoring, which is all the ways the experts undercut parents. Winning the Discipline Debates, which is all the scenarios you get yourself into. Then I step into the scene to talk you out of trouble. One is called You're a Better Parent Than You Think, which is my first book that I wrote way, 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 way back. Matter of fact, I think it's on some kind of sheepskin. That's how long ago I wrote it. I think it's in hieroglyphic, too. The English wasn't invented then. So those books are all there, and their main focus is to put the parent back in charge, yes. To have you develop a confident, calm authority. If you have authority, this whole parenting thing is a whale of a lot easier. If you can say to a child, please go to the corner, and he knows he better go, or there's going to be heavy consequences, then I don't care how much they act up. You can always just say, please go to the corner. For the little kids anyway. But most parents, unfortunately, can't get a kid to do that without a brawl.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true.
And when a parent tells me they can't do that, I say, that doesn't mean your child is strong-willed. That means you don't have authority.
See, and parents don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear it. But then well, how do they establish authority? And then there's no hitting in the house. There's no, and not necessarily that you have to hit your child in order to establish authority. That's not what I'm saying at all. But it's, they don't know where that fine line is anymore.
Because it's so gray. It's not a fine line. There's the problem. Even yes. The language. It's not a fine line.
You're indoctrinated, Dr. Ray.
You are, Crystalina. You really are.
You are
mom. They are not.
That is so funny. I am indoctrinated.
I talk about
so many
that.
Friends. Oh, my goodness. So people really should. This is an epidemic. I'm telling you, it is.
It's absolutely an epidemic. There's no question about it. The last 30, 40 years, experts have absolutely, completely ruined parents, as well as the culture becoming hideous. So given all that, I work in every one of those books to establish the kind of authority that parents will say, how do you establish it? I tell him to go to his room and I get a 27 minute argument, or I tell him to write me sentences and he looks at me like, yeah, you in what army? I tell, this is how you do it. I'll show you how to do it. I'm going to put you in authority. Within a week or two, you will have 50% better authority. Doesn't this sound like an infomercial?
Yes, I love it.
And you'll get the Popeil Vegematic along with Dr. A's authority books.
So many women are like, this is what I need. This is what's happening.
He's my hero.
No, I'm serious.
I love him for his mind.
Really? So it's an epidemic. I'm telling you, 9 times out of my friends, they are struggling with this. It's horrible.
Yes.
So,
here's what I do. It's my little authority test. I say, okay, here's what I want you to do. Next time your child does something bad or wrong, and you're allowed to use those words, you know, you don't have to say, oh, that's unacceptable. Inappropriate choices. Bless me, Father, for I have made inappropriate choices. So given that, you do a simple thing. You pick a consequence, whether it's the corner, whether it's their room, whether it's writing an essay, whatever your consequence is, say it one time. That's all. Say it calmly. No repeating. No warnings. No, did you hear what I said? No, just say it. And then you observe, how does the child react? Because their reaction tells you how they perceive you. Not their nature. Most kids are not strong-willed. Most kids are kids. Their reaction tells you whether they see you as having the authority to do this without a fight.
Hmm.
And that's critical. And most experts will not tell parents how to get that authority because most experts don't like the word authority.
Mm-mm. That's true. That's absolutely true.
We have to set up win-win scenarios. We have to use iMessages. We have to build a better sticker system.
So true. Oh, my goodness. Do you have videos that go along with your books as well?
Yeah. I have a Facebook page that has all kinds of this stuff on it.
Oh, excellent.
I do all kinds of that.
Okay. Where can people find you and want to go get more information? And all your books I know are on EWTN, but they really want to go in depth with their parenting, maybe adoption, all of it, Dr. A. What would you suggest?
There's a lot of stuff on my website. I do monologues on the radio show every day. So the lady who manages my website puts those monologues up. Also on the Facebook page, we put a lot of little videos up that talk about authority. And my most popular video, by the way, the most popular one, Crystalina, is the one where I said, if your 4-year-old won't go to the corner, here's what you do. And that thing exploded. And that tells you the percentage of parents who can't get a 4-year-old to go to the corner.
It's true. No, it's true. And people don't want to admit it, but it's happening. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely happening.
That's the other thing. This is you put your finger on it. One of the reasons why parents won't adopt is because their attitude is, I can't handle the two I have.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I want to add a third?
That's right. They already feel inadequate in what they're doing. So why pile more on top of it?
Mm-hmm. At one point, we had 12, 11, 10, 10, 9, 7, 4, 3,
oh my
2, and baby.
Gosh. Wow.
And you know what? My wife didn't work for a living. And that was a problem. I told her, I said, you get out and get a job, for heaven's sakes.
Did she smack you, Dr. Ray?
I got out of the hospital. It was like 3 weeks later.
I bet. Wow. Wow. Your wife's a hero. So are you. I don't know how, but wow. Good job on that one.
Well, you know, the other thing, she homeschooled. And the problem with that is, I told her, I said, honey, just stay 1 week ahead in the answer book. That's all you got to do.
Wow. Dr. Ray, thank you for being here today. We have ran out of time. I really appreciate you so much and all the answers that you give parents and all the people that are maybe thinking about being parents. And again, Dr. Ray has an excellent book on adoption, and it's called Adoption: Should You, Could You, and Then What? And you can go to his Facebook page and watch videos and get a lot more answers that you may be asking yourself. So thank you for being here, Dr. Ray, and God bless you.
Crystalina, as always.
So the topic of infertility sometimes goes hand in hand with the issue of adoption. And I wanted to just touch on that topic briefly. It's something that Dr. Ray brought up in the very beginning. And I asked my dear friend Marisa what her experience has been like dealing with infertility issues within her own marriage and as a woman, and what that's been like. And her answer was so beautiful and so honest. I wanted to share it with all of you.
Yeah, of course. First and foremost, I do want to tell women that it's common to have infertility issues. And I think it's something that people haven't wanted to talk about because it makes you feel like you're less of a woman. Because, you know, a woman having the opportunity to create, it's such a gift. But it's also a gift that has to be given to you. So I think it's really important to realize that everyone, that it's very common to have this struggle. I've only been married for 14 months, so it's still a little bit of a journey. But our first 6 months of being married, we really just wanted to, you know, kind of be in that honeymoon phase where we didn't want to have the pressure of, oh, you know, we want to get, you know, pregnant right now. Yeah. We just wanted to leave it up to God.
Yeah.
I can be a little bit of a type A personality where I'm like, okay, it's 6 months, like what's happening?
Yes.
You know, my dad and my mom, they had a honeymoon baby, and my dad's nickname is Tiro Fijo, which means bullseye in Spanish. So, I mean, and my husband's Italian, so he's very competitive. So he was like, we're going to match your parents. And,
yes,
you know,
yes.
So, you know, in the beginning phase after 6 months and people asking like, oh, you know, are you pregnant? Are you pregnant? And then I could just start to sense people were getting scared to ask me that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of made me feel a little insecure, and yes. Everyone knew we were open to life. And so when people would start to ask and then stop to ask, I could tell that they didn't want to hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And so deep down inside, I, you know, was just thinking to myself, you know, I need to dig deeper. So I started, you know, doing a lot of different things to kind of monitor my fertility. But at the end of the day, I, you know, was introduced to the Creighton model, which okay. is just has been such a huge learning experience, and it involves your husband and you. And I feel like sometimes all the focus can be on the woman, like what's wrong with you? What's yes. the problem? And my husband's so, been so sweet because, well, one day I had a really low moment, and he told me, he's like, there's nothing wrong with you.
Yes. No,
and
there's
not. And so that meant a lot. And I think through the Creighton model, you're empowered because you're understanding your body. And I think that's been the most beautiful thing, is your husband is helping you gauge every day what's going on with your body. And you're finding out all these new things, which can be very overwhelming, because there was a whole month where I was like, okay, what else is wrong with me?
Yes.
And again, it goes back to, there's nothing wrong with you. You just yes. need to understand what's going on with your body. And again, I think that empowerment is just, I mean, it's empowerment. Knowledge is power and understanding. And I think the church has this beautiful gift where you don't even have to be Catholic. You don't have to be anything, just to understand, okay, you know, this is my body, and reading these signs that your body is communicating to you.
That's right.
I don't think that's non-denominational.
Yes.
And I think it's really important for women to know that you can practice natural family planning. It's organic. It's healthy.
Yes.
We live in such a green, you know, world that it's like, why wouldn't you be green with your body?
That's
and
right.
And treat it like
that's
a temple.
Right, huh?
So I
exactly.
think that's really important.
Like, so, they can't worry about green cars than they do.
Yeah.
Be natural with our bodies.
Yeah, people are worried about
hormones. Is that why you chose the Creighton model? Like, it's very unique. So
it is
why
very
did you
unique.
Why did you choose that one?
I chose it because it is unique, and it really caters to your body. So, I mean, every single day you look at everything that happened to your body, and there's ways of charting, and you know, I encourage people to learn more about it, because it is definitely a very disciplined practice.
Yes.
But if you are having infertility issues and you want to understand what's happening, you have to be disciplined. You have to educate yourself. And so that's why I did the Creighton, was I wanted my husband to be in this journey with me and to help me understand my body. And again, the Creighton method, it's so unique, and it gives a microscope into you.
That's right.
And I
that's
think everyone right. has their own unique journey. And it could be the smallest little thing that's off. And through this and seeing signs from your body, you'll understand, wow, like that's all that was wrong with me, or yes. that's all I had to just change yes. to make myself healthier. I think that's the biggest thing. And Creighton, after we had our first kind of introduction to it, we had a big like lesson where you had to study. And we walked away, and my husband and I said, we're like, we have hope.
That's right.
And I think that finally was a relief to me, because all these doctors were telling me, you're fine. But I knew there was just something off,
right.
you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I walked away, I was like, I have hope.
And I think that's the most beautiful thing about it, is there is hope, because, you know, it's a very effective way to monitor yourself as well.
I want to commend you, because a lot of doctors right away will go to, well, this isn't working, why don't we try in vitro?
Yeah.
You know, it goes in that direction. And I want to commend you for not doing that. We talked about that just with your faith and with the church and just the protection with all of that and really just doing God's will in our life. It's just like, no, we trust and we just give everything to God, because He gives life, He takes life, and we just, as women, trust in all things with our marriages and our children and our future family, and we just give all of that over and not putting it in man's hands, but we are putting it in God's hands.
And I think that's important too. And you always say, face it, own it, heal it.
Yes, that's right. Face it, own it, heal it.
And so I think that's important too, is, I mean, with in vitro, you're kind of putting a Band-Aid over what is the issue.
There is a problem.
And so it's like, wouldn't you rather know what the issue is instead of just putting a Band-Aid over it? Like, you know, dig deeper and figure out. I mean, it's hard.
Yes.
But I think anything that's hard, it's worth it.
I want to thank my guest again, Dr. Ray Guarendi, for being here again at Women Made New. And as I was really looking in and getting prepared for this show to adoption, I really started thinking about how God the Father did that for each one of us. That adoption is an act of taking something on as your own. And through our baptism, that's what God the Father did for each one of you. And it's really beautiful, because if you look at different scriptures in the Bible, there's adoption there in a lot of ways. And Moses was adopted. And I'm sure his mother grieved as she laid her infant son in the Nile River and watched how he was raised by another family. But Moses grew to lead the Exodus. I mean, God gave him the Ten Commandments. And then you go on and you see that Jesus himself was adopted. He was adopted by Saint Joseph. And despite the pressure that Saint Joseph had from his own culture, he chose to become the adopted father of the Son of God. And in the face of murderous tyrant, he helped preserve the salvation of the world. He was that covering for Jesus to be able to grow up peacefully and become and grow into the man that God wanted him to be before he had to go public. And we're all chosen by no merit of our own, by a merciful and loving God. And our adoption was planned before the very foundation of the world. And it's through that adoption that God the Father gave us that we have the privilege to call him Father. And that's a big deal. And for those of you that may be thinking about adoption, know that I will be praying for you and your discernment process this weekend, and that God the Father is with you and he will never ask you more than you can handle. And so just be at peace and know that. And for all things Catholic, you can always go to EWTN.com. And if you'd like to know more information about me and my ministry, go to womenmadenew.com and know that you are in my prayers. And I ask if you could please keep my family in your prayers as well. So I hope you have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and God bless.